These are the voices of Rotary.
The voices that tell our stories.
The voices that share our why.
The voices that make our lives matter.
The voices that relieve suffering and anguish.
These are the voices of Rotary that change lives.
Take a listen.
Welcome to the second episode of the Almeida Fire Rising from the Ashes podcast. I am Michelle Corradetti, the past president of the Rotary Club of Medford, Oregon.
And I'm Alan Harper, past president of the Rotary Club of Ashland, Oregon. In the first episode, Michelle and I interviewed a variety of people in the Rogue Valley, including two Rotarians, Chris Chambers, the Forest Division Chief for Ashland Fire Department, as well as Joan Williamson, who lived in Talent, Oregon, and her house was directly in the path of the fire. We also interviewed citizens of the Rogue Valley, including Guy Tower, who is the regional chief economist for the state of Oregon, and Catalina and Adriel Gámez, who lived in Phoenix, Oregon.
To begin episode two, you will hear the experience of Chris Chambers as he drives down Highway 99 in the thick of the fire.
Driving down 99 will probably be one of my most vivid memories of the fire, and just everything is burning on multiple, both sides of 99 between Ashland and through Talent. Businesses are burning. Thick black smoke is just going across the road, and, you know, trying to drive through it. Am I going to hit somebody? What's on the other side of this? Is there a fire engine stopped in the road and I'm going to run into him? And, you know, I'm trying to honk, and luckily nothing bad happened. But just watching all these structures burning was like, oh my gosh, wow. And finally get to Talent and into the neighborhood there, and there's an entire apartment complex of dozens and dozens of units burning right next to the place. I was trying to figure out if it was there or not. It was there, but the siding was actually melting off of it. It was so hot. And there's our firefighters from Ashland are getting a hydrant and trying to do all they can to save it. And we've got District 5 there already, and there's, you know, houses are burning already. It was like, wow, this is bad.
If Chris thought everything looked bad, Guy Tower describes it as even worse.
It looked like the whole valley from Ashland to Phoenix and almost into Medford was just engulfed in flames. You could just see the glow going that whole distance. And then, of course, the sound of those propane canisters and transformers and whatever, it just sounded like a war zone.
As the fire is raging through Phoenix and Talent, 17-year-old Adriel Gámez is rushing home to meet his family, and this is what he sees.
I actually didn't really get to take anything. When I got there, on my way there, I was like, when I was 5 minutes away, my mom called me and asked me where I was because she thought I was still at work. And so I told her I'm on my way home. I'll be there as soon as I can. And that if she couldn't wait for me, then it'd be fine to go. But she told me she'd wait. So I hurried home. And when I got there, all I remembered was the ashes in the air, the smoke, the police officer telling us to leave, and my brother handing me a bag of some clothes that I had ready to leave beforehand. And that's all I had. It was a couple shirts and some other things that I needed. It wasn't much.
If you had only a few minutes to decide what was most important to pack during an evacuation, what would you take? That was the dilemma facing thousands of residents here in the Rogue Valley.
What we packed was mostly pictures and mementos, things from our family. My mother had passed away recently, so I grabbed some of her embroidery and needlework and things that she'd passed on to me. So I grabbed a few of those family heirlooms.
Rotarian Joan Williamson was also rushing home to her house to evacuate the day of the fire.
So I got to the entrance here, and I saw all these cars lined up trying to get out. So I rolled down the window and said, are we evacuating? They said, yes. So I went in to the entrance, and there were two Ashland police officers there. And I asked them, I said, I understand we're evacuating. You're going the wrong direction, they said. And I said, well, I'd like to go get my cat and my medicines. I take a lot of medicine and my money out of the freezer, which they laughed at. You know, that dates me, doesn't it? And so they said, you go and go fast and go now. So I pull in the driveway. I get the money out of the freezer, get my big bag of medicines, and I get the cat, try to find the cat. Nowhere to be found. And so they're outside saying, you need to go now.
From personal experience in having to evacuate for fires in the Reno, Tahoe area several years ago, just like Joan Williamson, our daughter's main concern was to pack up our pets, their food, their beds, and that was also on the mind of Guy Tower.
We got our menagerie of five dogs and five birds and four cats all packed up in our two cars and in cages and ready to go. And I was still trying to track down one cat and been calling him for the whole afternoon. But at that point, it was fairly chaotic. I mean, you could start to hear there were explosions. You could hear the transformers exploding, and probably some fuel tanks or I think a lot of it was propane canisters and transformers. But it just sounded like a war zone because you could just hear that sound off in the distance. And knowing that cat was probably traumatized, I didn't think we were going to be able to get him. But just kind of at the last couple of calls, there he comes out of the forest. And so we had all our stuff together in two vehicles, people in cages and animals in cages, and then we were trying to decide where to go.
As residents of the Rogue Valley are evacuating, Chris Chambers and other first responders are still on the front line of the fire.
This fire wasn't going out. It was moving so quickly. At one point, one of our fire engines is on I-5, and they said the fire is going faster than they are on the freeway. So this fire is moving really quickly. Fire engines don't go fast on the freeway, 40, 50, 50 miles an hour about. But still, a fire is moving 40 or 50 miles an hour. You're not going to get ahead of it. It's going to expose a lot of people. So at that point, it's a rescue mission. It's not as much about firefighting as it is about getting people out of the way.
At this point, the Rogue Valley had several elements conspiring against it. We had drought conditions making the landscape dry. We had raging winds. Of course, the Alameda fire. And what about water?
So in the middle of the night, the water basically just ran out in Talent. And the same thing happened in Phoenix. We thought we were holding the line pretty good in a lot of places. And then as engines went to hook up to hydrants, they realized, whoa, this just doesn't have nearly as much pressure as the last time I was here, only 15 minutes ago. And then we'll go to another hydrant, same thing. Another hydrant, same thing. And then we started working our way down the hill as water was flowing down with gravity. We could get water out of hydrants that were further down towards Bear Creek. And finally, those hydrants just failed also. So what happened is the water demand on the entire water delivery system at that end of the that Rogue Valley intertie from all the way from Medford and Central Point through to Phoenix Talent. And then Ashland has the option to turn that source on as well. Though it wasn't on during the fire. It just basically ran out in Phoenix and Talent, in part because, yes, firefighters are using a lot of water to try to put fires out, but also every house that burns leaves a flowing water connection as the pipes burn back and the water just spills out. And, a few houses, not going to make a difference. Dozens, then hundreds of houses, that does make a difference.
As firefighters across the Rogue Valley were running out of water, other people found ways to fight the fire.
The back of the house, I learned later, was on fire. And the owners and the owner, the husband of the owner, and their sons were going around trying to save the houses. I don't know where they were, how they got in here, but there was no water. The pump was down in Medford, so you could turn a hose on, nothing would happen. Well, it just so happened I had 5 gallons of water in the driveway. And I had it there because it had expired, and I was going to water my roses. Well, they saw smoke coming from the back of my house, and I had bark on the ground back there, and I have a retaining wall. Well, the fire was on the hill. It came over the retaining wall, burned my trees, two Rainier cherry and the most wonderful peach, and burned the bark and was burning on the back of my house. So they took the 5 gallons of water, poured it on the fire. That wasn't enough. So they opened up my storage unit, cut the tops off of 5 cases of 16-ounce bottled water, poured that on it. Still wasn't enough. Took 3 gallons of distilled water. Still not enough. So they took all the gallon jugs over to the swimming pool and filled them up with water several times and were able to put out the fire.
If you were to look at an aerial view of the devastation from the fire, you would really question the randomness of what survived and what burned.
It may seem random because an engine happened to be available, they happened to have a tank of water, and they drove by, and this building was burning and this one wasn't, and they protected the one that wasn't burning, and they moved on. And nobody will know, except the firefighters that were there, which buildings got protected, but clearly with many, many dozens, we had every fire engine we could get from Jackson and Josephine County on this fire. There were a lot of saves. A lot of firefighters did courageous, amazing things and saved buildings. Most people won't know where that was, and it seems random, but there were a lot of hard work.
One of the families who lost everything in the Alameda fire was the Gamez family. Michelle and I interviewed Adriel and his mom, Catalina, and discussed their emotions and the practicalities of losing everything in the fire. One of the things that we talked about as we wrapped up our interview was there anything when they were evacuating that they weren't able to bring?
I can't even say. I don't have any pictures of my kids. Nothing. They were like, from where they're babies. I don't have nothing. I don't have their pictures. I used to keep like the outfit where they were like presented at church. I lost everything. Everything. I know I have all my memories in my mind of everything that we have lived together. And I mean, I know I have them in my mind, but they don't have that. They don't have a picture to remember their first birthday, when they were little, when they were born. They don't have anything. But that's the only thing that I wish that I grabbed, but I couldn't. How I was supposed to grab like all the pictures. I didn't even have time to grab the important documents like my U.S. citizenship. I didn't have time to grab that. And a lot of other things that I couldn't get. But I mean, I can get those things back. But I miss all those things like for them so they can have like a picture of them when they were little, when they were born. All that stuff. I don't have it. But I have them. So. That's the important thing. I have them with me. Yeah.
Adriel describes the devastation of the Alameda fire very succinctly.
For me, it feels like a movie because the whole... the insane wind, the fire, it's like what you see in like an apocalypse movie. Mm-hmm. You see people walking away, like there were some people like bruised and hurt. I don't know what happened to them, and I just had to imagine the worst in moments. And walking back to our car, there was highway signs flying through the air. One flew right in front of me. And I just didn't even want to think about it, so I just kept walking.
Thank you for joining us on this podcast. In the next podcast, episode 3, Michelle and I'll continue to explore the immediate after effects of the Alameda fire and talk with the victims of the fire here in the Rogue Valley. Please stay tuned.
Next time on Voices of Rotary.
It's just so true. Rotarians are ordinary people who accomplish extraordinary things through the power of Rotary. We're committed to creating lasting change across the globe and right here in our own communities. Hello, I'm past District Governor Bill Grile, and today I caught up with an exceptional Rotarian who is following his passion, touching lives, and creating meaningful change.
Join us for the journey at voicesofrotary.org.